Welcome to the Long Timers, the Joy of Living panel. My name is Linda, and I'm a compulsive overeater and your moderator for this workshop. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before we get started, we ask that all cell phones or other electronic devices be turned off or to silent now. To protect our anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed. Please be aware that if you are speaking or sharing, your voice will be audible on the authorized recording, and we ask that you come up to the table after the meeting and sign a release form if you haven't already done so. The opinions expressed here today are those of the individual OA members and do not represent Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. The format for this session is as follows. We will have three speakers who will share for 12 minutes each, followed by questions or three-minute open pitches until 5 minutes before the end of the session. The topic for the session is Long-Timers, the Joy of Living, and our first speaker is Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Grateful to be at the OA birthday party again and here with all of you. And I just got emotional looking around the room, seeing how many people are here that are part of my recovery and my journey in recovery from food addiction. Thank you all for being part of my life and for being here today. I love Overeaters Anonymous. It's not my first 12-step program, but food was certainly my first addiction. My mom said even when I was an infant, I didn't stop feeding until she physically took a bottle out of my mouth. When it comes to a lot of substances, but especially food, I have no off switch. Like, people say, well, stop eating when you're not hungry anymore, and I don't know what that means. I still don't know what that means. And really, even lately, I've decreased the portions of my food a little bit and, like, not had the extra snack and waited until I was actually hungry. I'm still terrified of being hungry. I don't know if that's, like, a reaction of being a premature baby, or if it's just being an addict, like, I'm hungry, damn it. But I'm so grateful for the program of Overeaters Anonymous. I got here in November of 2010, and I immediately knew what my abstinence was. I'm a sugar addict, like anything sweet and sexy, like forget about it. And then chips and crackers, like anything salty, cheesy, greasy, I can't have a little bit. It's like I eat that stuff in a blackout, like all of a sudden the package is empty and I don't know how it happened. I yo-yo dieted up and down my entire life. My closet was from size 2 to size 20. I'm down 85 pounds from my top weight, and I've been maintaining a healthy body weight for 8.5 years. And for those of you that bought a different size clothes every year for many, many years, you know what a miracle that is. I love that the topic is the joy of living. I don't know that I'm a long timer, but for someone like me, 9 years without being face down in a carton of ice cream is a long time. So I guess I'm declaring myself a long timer. But I definitely have the joy of living thanks to abstinence in Overeaters Anonymous. When I'm chasing the high of food, it's all I think about. It's all consuming. All I can think about is what I get to eat, when I get to eat it, how much I get to eat, who saw me eat it, when I can get more to eat. Are my clothes going to fit when I get dressed? What do you think of the way I look in this dress? Like, all it's the most self-destructive and self-centered malady I could even imagine all at the same time. It doesn't make sense to me to be self-destructive and self-centered at the same time, but that's exactly what food addiction does to me. And I couldn't really be present in my life, and I couldn't have real connections with other human beings when I was in the food. And I definitely believe that I had to put down my addictive foods and food behaviors to do the level of spiritual work I needed to do in the 12 steps and Overeaters Anonymous to stay recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Like, if I can't, I can't sit and do my written step work with a bowl of M&Ms sitting next to me. Like, that's just not going to work. And it's wildly uncomfortable at first. You know, at 43 years old when I got here, I had comforted myself with food my entire life. And giving that up, I started having a lot of feelings. So if you're new to program and you've got some feelings coming up, sadness, anger, resentment, whatever, like, they just started spewing out. I was crying for no reason, laughing inappropriately. It was like I had Tourette's because it all just started coming out because I'd pushed it down for my entire life. And the beauty of being a recovered compulsive overeater is my life doesn't revolve around food anymore. I can really be present in my life and really be connected with all of you and have real relationships and authentic experiences. And I was just going through the motion, acting as if, you know, when I was in the food. And, you know, I've been through a lot in recovery and not had to pick up the food. And probably the biggest event was my mom dying of ALS about 18 months ago. And first, being able to show up and take care of her was the greatest honor and one of the greatest joys of my life. But I really had a big psychic change and shift after her illness because I realized there were so many things that she wanted to do that she now doesn't have the opportunity to do. And the only thing my entire life that has stood between me and my dreams and my hopes and my desires was food, self-hatred, and fear, crippling fear. Like, when I got here, I didn't want anyone looking at me because I knew you were judging me. I didn't want anyone to pay attention to me. And now to be able to comfortably sit in front of a large room full of people and know that you've got my back and you love me and accept me exactly the way I am is amazing. I think the greatest joy in Overeaters Anonymous is the unconditional love and acceptance that we find here, even more than I found in other 12-step programs. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter if we need to lose 100 pounds, if we're starving ourselves to death, if we're abstinent, if we're struggling, if we're just back, if we're trying to get back. Like, everyone here is here to love and support you in your journey in recovery. And I tried to do this by myself my entire life. All I needed was the right diet and the right exercise plan, and I would have it, you know? And I tried every diet, every exercise plan, every protein powder, every diet pill, everything you could possibly do, and I always lost weight and always gained it back plus more. The peace of mind is the greatest gift. The spiritual awakening and that psychic change is the greatest gift, without a doubt, in Overeaters Anonymous. But I'm not going to lie and say that physical recovery doesn't feel good, too. You know, I don't take a huge dose of high blood pressure medication anymore. I take a little one. I'm not on two antidepressants. I'm not on acid reflux disease. I'm not, you know, in dire straits because of pelvic prolapse, because of all the extra weight pressing down on my organs. Like, I was sick when I got here, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And all of that straightens out through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. But it's a journey that doesn't end. It's a journey that I have to keep doing the work to recover. And I just started working with a new sponsor, and we're looking at some of the childhood triggers that cause my defects of character and you know, those knee-jerk reactions that I still emotionally have sometimes. And it's scary as hell and exciting, too, because everything that I'm willing to take a look at means that there's more freedom on the other side. You know, In recovery, you know, I'm down 85 pounds, and to be able to just walk in a store and buy clothes off the rack is amazing. To go to my closet and know that they're going to fit when I get dressed in the morning. To just feel part of society instead of judging myself against everyone and everything else. I'm 52 years old and I'm in the best shape of my life. And I feel better about myself than I ever have before. I have a lot of girlfriends that are also in perimenopause. Sorry, guys. That are having a really rough time with it. You know, like the changes and I'm old and I hate myself and I love myself more than I ever have, and I get to take good care of myself. And when I take good care of myself, I get to be of service to you and other people in the world. And I don't have to be self-centered and self-destructive anymore. You know, in recovery, I lost my mom, I lost my dog, my boss freaked out, the guy left, and I didn't have to eat over any of it. And God always has something even greater in store on the other side of whatever I let go of. And as an addict, I still don't like change. Like, change is terrifying. Even if it's good change, we're like, no, this is my normal. It's right here in this box. Leave me alone. And I don't have to live that way anymore. I can try new things. And, you know, in recovery, I've been performing again. And that was my dream my entire life, but I felt unworthy of the attention. I felt unworthy of having anyone pay attention to me, of having a dream. I didn't think I deserved to have a dream. And today in recovery, in abstinence, in the program of Overeaters Anonymous, you know, I can dream about anything and everything. I get to perform. I get to hike. I get to take care of my little dog. I know God, I have friends that are afraid they're going to be single forever. I'm not afraid of that. Like, God has the right and perfect partner out there for me. I don't know who it is or when I'll meet them, but I'm sure that's going to happen. And I just get to dream a dream and live a life beyond my wildest dreams. If you would have told me I could live 9 years without sweets to quell my soul, I never would have believed it. And now it's like movie props, like I see it, but it's like it's other people's food or it's you know, it doesn't even matter. It's a coffee table. If I'm in fit spiritual condition, And my hope for myself and for you today is that we all remain willing to continue to do this work, to change and grow and step into the great life that God has intended for us, that we get to get out of our own way and get out there and really live. And if you're struggling, reach out to the person next to you. Reach out to me after this panel. I love you. I'm here for you. And I wish everyone happiness in recovery in Overeaters Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. And our next speaker is Frank D.
Hi, everybody. My name is Frank. I'm a compulsive overeater. I like looking at you. So I can see you all. The only reason I'm on this panel is because I'm old and I've been here a long time. So it could have been called old timers and I would not have been offended. I've accepted that fact. I'll talk more about that later. So I came in July 3rd, 1983 here in Los Angeles. I got abstinent in 1986. Part of the definition of that is I gave up refined sugar. And then I had 21 years of nice, clean abstinence, and I looked good, you know? Somebody sent me a picture of myself from that period, and I said, damn, I look good. And, that was then. This is now. In 2007... I was going through probably the most stressful period of my life, professionally, personally, and I went on a vacation to Italy, and I started eating white bread again, and that was the beginning of a relapse. So by the way, I'm the guy on the panel for those of you who have done this program imperfectly, because that's all I really have to share is my imperfect program. So 2007, I went into this kind of slow motion relapse where I was gaining 2-3 pounds a year and not really owning it. And then OA changed. It didn't change. OA published a definition of abstinence. And when I first heard it, that abstinence is refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and being at or working towards a healthy body weight, I said, damn, my covers have been pulled. Because I wasn't working towards a healthy body weight. I was working away from a healthy body weight. Slowly, very slowly. See, the other thing that happened around that time is I was in my mid-50s, and my metabolism started slowing down. So even just, you know, a couple hundred extra calories a day translated into continual weight loss. So in 2015, I decided, okay, I got to start all over again. So I talked to my sponsors, I have two, and reset. And one of the things I started doing is coming back here to the birthday party. Oh, let me tell you about that. So I came into the program in Los Angeles. I was here 10 years. I moved to Washington, D.C. I was in program in D.C. for 7. Great program in D.C. I came back here for 10 years. I was back here for 10 years in program. I moved to Boston. I was in program in Boston for 4 years. Now I live in New York City for the last 5. And so I've experienced program all over the place, and I've gone to meetings all over the place in different cities, and I've had more time to tell you about that experience. But anyway, so the point is I've been here for a long time. And so now I am working back towards a healthy body weight, and I am working the program. I have 2 sponsors, as I mentioned. I have my West Coast food sponsor, and I have my East Coast step sponsor. So no matter what time zone I'm in, I can call somebody in a proper time zone. And I am now, because I'm redoubling down on this abstinence, I write my food sponsor every day, and I tell him what I ate. And the big challenge there, of course, is to be more honest every day. And then now my step sponsor sends me his writing on the reading from today, and then I take the same question from for today, and I write it on it, and I send it back to him, and then we talk on Sundays or other times in between if necessary. Same thing with my step sponsor, as call as needed, you know. So, and I'm sponsoring 4 guys, and I take them through the 12 steps by reading through the 12 and 12, and then when they're done, we transition to the daily reader, and we talk about that. So you know, I'm sponsored. I got sponsored and all that. Let's talk about the joy of living. The program has given me an emotional vocabulary. When I came into the program, you know, I didn't know what I was feeling. It was all too vague. It was just stuffed down by food. It was gray. And so now I have this tremendous emotional vocabulary because I actually feel things. I was telling somebody the other day, I was sitting in the, some of you will remember the maintainers meeting on Ohio Street. I was around my 2nd year in program. I'm sitting in the back of that meeting, and I felt something. And what I felt was compassion for the speaker. Up until that point, I had done nothing but judge the person in the front of the room. And at this point, my heart went out to that person. And I said, oh, this, and I finally found out the name for it was compassion. It wasn't pity. It wasn't sympathy. It was compassion. I really cared about them. I cared about their suffering. I identified with it. So, and then going from there, through therapy and other things, I realized all the different shades of anger that I'm capable of, you know? Everything from the long-term seething resentment to road rage, and all the other colors of emotions in between. So the program has given me an emotional vocabulary I did not have before because it gave me back my feelings, the things I was suppressing by eating. So let's talk about the feeling of joy and what that is. Let's just throw off the table hilarity and exuberance, okay? Because nobody can maintain that thing. Nobody can maintain that for very long, right? So let's put on the table serenity, because I think serenity is actually just long-term, slow, simmering joy, okay? So let's put that one on the table, and let's also talk about delight, when something delights me. And let's talk about, as one of my former sponsors talks about, let's talk about the Yahoo moment, when it's, oh, wow. That's been happening to me a lot. I've been walking around, you know. I was in program 20 years in L.A., and so now every time I turn a corner, it's like, oh, wow, look at you. So I'm going to talk about some things that bring me delight. This morning, I woke up. The house I'm staying in has this beautiful garden. It's got plumeria and rosemary and oregano and rose bushes and all kinds of cactus and nectarine tree and a lemon tree, and it's a beautiful garden. And I go out there and I do Tai Chi, and the sun is coming up, and it's just delight. This is beauty. This is like aesthetic joy that I am capable of feeling, and a gift I've given to myself because I got out of bed when it was dark so that I could go into this garden and do this. And, of course, I had a cup of coffee, too. That brings me delight. I have a sponsee that calls me in the morning, and we're working through right now. We just finished step five. We're starting on step six. We talk about it for 15 minutes, and you know, eventually he'll get through all 12 steps. And when he calls me, I actually go, oh, good. You know, it's like delight in talking to the guy. You know why? Because it's working. I see it working in his life. And so I know I'm being of service. His life is changing for the better. He's going to be a better husband. So that's all to the good. I enjoy doing that. Not every sponsee has brought me delight. I told you, I've been in the program 36 years, so... One of the delights of my life, one of the great joys of my life this year, my younger brother moved 12 blocks from me in Manhattan. He brought with him his wonderful wife and his two daughters, who are 7 and 4. And so these are my nieces. They call me Uncle Frankie. And they want to play all the time. And they are my dad died like 8 years before the oldest was born. So I'm the surrogate granddad. I'm the closest thing they're going to know to a grandfather. And because her family's all, she was a refugee, so she doesn't even know her grandparents. These little girls, whenever I go over, I go over there a lot. Sometimes I pick them up from school, and, you know, I've been fingerprinted by school system in New York City, so I can pick them up from school. They just, you know, let's go play. Okay. If I'm out with them in a playground, it's the swing set. You know, we're going to go to the swing set, and I'm going to enjoy these little girls. And they bring me joy. And I know what I'm getting. I'm getting joy. And so, of course, I'm going to go to that. And so that's really what I want to say. One of the great gifts of the program is I've learned to go to healthy people. Go to where the love is. Go to where the beauty is. Go to where the joy is. And, you know, just put yourself in places where good things can happen. The other thing, one of the great things is... The other thing, and this is one of the, you know, I have got a whole bank of program phrases in my head. I could be like a vending machine of just program phrases. But one of the ones I really like is eat like somebody who loves themselves. And so, you know, that's what I'm trying to do today, and eat like somebody who loves themselves. And I will just, since I've got about 30 seconds, I'll tell you, this is where I'm at in my step work. I am learning, I'm releasing, I'm asking God to improve a certain defect of character, which is when you say something to me, my response is not to be sarcastic, ironic, or you know, make some witticism out of it, or try to prove to you that I'm smarter than you are. My response now, what I want it to be, is compassion. I want to listen to you as someone who cares about what you're saying and doesn't have to prove anything back to you. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. And our last speaker is Don.
Hi, I'm Don, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Don.
I am just a little under 2 weeks shy of 22 years of abstinence. But if you ask me why I came to program the first day I got here, I'd look at you like, is this a trick question? I mean, I came here to lose weight. Why else would anybody show up here? If you ask me now why I'm here, I'll tell you it's because I don't want to eat compulsively. And that's really different. I can lose weight and white knuckle and hang on and feel this entire spring wind up inside me because I'm intense and I'm trying to graft something so alien to the core of who I am as a way of behavior that it just explodes and I gain back all the weight and more. And yet if I do the deal in the program, I get relieved of that spring winding up. I get relieved of that obsession. My first default in coming here was, how quick can I learn this? How little do I have to give in return? And how fast can I get out of here? What I've learned over the course of program, and by the way, my sponsor took me to an old, very strong AA meeting. I'm not an alcoholic, but I went with him. And this old timer says, kid, this is a $1 million program. You get it a nickel at a time. And it's true that the longer I'm here, the more I get from it. But the true psychic shift, the true joy that comes out of it happens, along the way. And, you know, some people earlier, some people later. But if I am doing this the right way, if I'm doing it and so forth, the program is actually really simple. There's only two parts to it, and they're all in the doctor's opinion. Number one, I've got an allergy of the body, they call it, which means that I'm abnormal when it comes to food. When I start eating compulsively, I cannot stop. I'm like taking your car to the gas station, filling it up, and not having a fill switch on the pump. I'll just keep going. That's the allergy of the body. But that would be solved if I could just not start eating compulsively. The problem is I also have an obsession in my head that makes me think of food constantly. And the obsession, even though I know intellectually when I start doing that, I'm gone and I'm out, I can't stop because of this obsession continuing. The program can deal with the obsession. And the way it does it is by turning outward. It's kind of the theme all of us are talking about today. At least for me, that's the only thing that works. Nothing ever worked before program. I gained and lost weight over and over again. I could somehow get into this weird mindset where I'm ready to go and I think I got it this time and it's going to be different. And then pretty soon I was back with more weight than I started. I was sitting there wondering what happened and having no clue why and not understanding how it slipped away. But when I changed my mindset, and this happened gradually for me because I really came in with a default position of it's all about me and I want to get it for myself and I don't really want to give you anything for it. When my mindset changed to realize that if I put my focus elsewhere, I get a release from the obsession in a way that I don't get otherwise. And clearly that was not my default coming in. But the more I did it, the more I paid attention to it. For example, when I went to holiday parties where there was a lot of food, after I got in program, I was like stunned to realize there were people at these parties. If I can actually engage in a genuine conversation with someone at a party, and really listen and really be there, not sort of looking, glancing over, is somebody getting more hors d'oeuvres than I got? If I can really engage, the obsession gets lifted. If I can really think about other people, if I can really do something meaningfully, not just sort of the lip service of walk through it, I can get a release from the obsession. Now, it didn't start that way. It started out where I had to take the action. There's a program expression that Frank, I'm sure, has in his vending machine of the idea that you can't think your way into right acting, but you can act your way into right thinking. That has definitely been my experience, because there, I do things they call contrary action that I don't feel like doing, that I don't want to do. But when I do them, then I begin to change and the ship starts to turn. And now it gets to be more of a maintenance, which is much easier than turning the ship in the first instance. On the other hand, it's not always easy. Some days come easily. Sometimes things go nicely. A lot of times they don't. I heard another great expression recently that expectations are planned resentments. And to the extent that I can be open to, you know, the joy of what's going to happen, I don't have to predict it, but I could, sort of like reading a book. My tendency is flip over to the last chapter and see what happens, who killed him. But if I read the book, I get a much more pleasure just by going through it. And in the same way, I can live life, is that I don't have to know the outcome. I don't have to control it. I don't even know that I want the responsibility of controlling the world, right? Then I got to actually decide all these things. I just know that if I can get into a mindset that I'm going to be taken care of and I can turn it over to a power greater than myself to take care of me, my life gets better. Whether you have doubts about it or so forth, my only thing is it works. Maybe it's a fairy tale. Maybe it's a rationalization. The scientists say everything is random and then we rationalize it. Maybe. But I do know that when I change my attitude toward it, my life gets better. It gets easier. I don't stress the same way. I find that these are things that I never expected from program. I literally only came here because I wanted to lose weight, and I had this mentality that even though I'd been proved wrong every time I dieted, that if my weight went away, all the other problems were solved. And I, as a kid, that certainly was my tendency, was just to blame because I was heavy from the time I was little. I don't remember not being overweight. But it was always to blame everything's because of the fat. And if I wasn't fat, my life would be perfect and everything would be great. Well, that turned out not to be true. Even when I dieted, I knew that and saw it, but it still was an illusion in my head. So losing the weight was a wonderful thing, and it made me feel good about myself. But if anything, having a lot of years in program can make me cocky. My head wants to go, hey, look how long you got. You got this. You can relax now. Take it easy. Have a little extra this or that. Because the disease doesn't go away for me. It's still there. It still wants me back. It's still trying to figure out ways to maneuver. And the difference is I have tools to deal with it. I have a few seconds between the impulse and the action that never existed in my life before. I can literally remember thinking this is not a good idea as I was stuffing food in my mouth. At least now I can think this is not a good idea and the food's not quite in the mouth yet. And I have a chance to do something. And as long as I stay in a fit spiritual condition, I can get a release from the obsession. But it's a temporary release. I had a sponsee with a gift or analogy who said, I can't stay clean today on yesterday's shower. To me, it's one of the most powerful things I've heard in program. Because it really doesn't matter how many years I have. It really doesn't. What matters is what I'm going to do in the next 24 hours. What matters is what I'm doing right now. What matters is how I react when things don't go the way that I think they should, which is a fair amount of time. And if I'm in good shape, I can understand that, there's another thing I heard early on. God only gives you three answers. Yes. Yes, but not now. Or no, I have something better for you. I've always found that incredibly comforting. And in my experience, it's true. When I've wanted something really bad and not been able to get it, I'll maybe find out 4 or 5 years later why I shouldn't have had it, because something fabulous happened that wouldn't have if I'd gotten it, or something terrible happened if I had gotten it. And my experience long-term is it's always worked that way. My mom, who was very spiritual, would say, you know, if you're trying too hard to get something, it's not right for you. And again, that's been my experience. So it's the adjustment of my own attitude. The unacceptance part of the big book is probably my favorite, meaning acceptance is the answer to my problems, and I should concentrate not so much on what needs to change in the world, but on what should change with me and my attitudes. So thank you for letting me be a servant.
Thank you, Don. Okay, let's see. Try it without glasses. The meeting's now open for questions or 3-minute pitches. Make sure the speaker, we ask that you limit your share to 3 minutes and confine your share to the your experience, strength, and hope. Confine your share. Huh? Oh, confine your share. Let's see. Please sign the release form at the podium prior to speaking. We ask that you limit your share to 3 minutes and confine your share to your experience, strength, and hope on the topic discussed today. The session ends at 5:15. 3 minutes. Let's see. Okay. So who'd like to share? Come up here, please. And sign, everyone has to sign that shares. We need a pen up here, I think.
Oh, my God.
And then you can pick someone after that.
I do? Okay. I'm very nervous. I'm Julie, compulsive overeater and sugar addict.
Hi, Julie.
Thank you so much, guys. I really admire you standing there. Oh, sorry. I'm going to speak louder. I was just saying how much I admire these people here sharing with honesty their journey. When they say beyond my wildest dreams, this program totally sells me, whatever they're trying to sell me. But what I've been going through is freedom of judgment. It's the biggest character defect that I have, and I use it against myself, being so, so hard on myself, thinking I was the worst mother in the world. I have 3 children, 3 daughters. They're 8 years old, 5 years old, and 3 years old. It was a challenge to become abstinent. When I came to the rooms, I kept looking for moms. I was like, where are they? And where are the moms with younger children? Because that's the toughest stage, you know? You live around candy all the time. And I wanted to share with you guys that this past Halloween, we all dressed as princesses, Disney princesses. Jasmine, Rapunzel, all of them, because me and my 3 kids. I posted on Facebook the picture after, and one of my friends said, oh, that looks like you're happily ever after. And immediately I was like, why do people think my life is perfect? Why do people, I come from Mexico, and I mean, my dream to come here was to make money in U.S. dollars, not have 3 children and no help. It's so hard to afford extra hands. I don't have any support system. I don't have connections. I couldn't work when I moved here to the States. I didn't have a working permit. And today, for me, hope is joy to know that things will get better. They have been getting better ever since I joined OA. It's been a miracle. I dropped 50 pounds. I cannot believe it. I had 3 C-sections. I was on the row. I was saying, I'm going to accept my body the way it is. It doesn't matter. I'm growing. I'm getting bigger. I'm going to teach my daughters to accept themselves as they are. And when I got here, I was like, oh, no, that's not acceptance. I have to do something for myself. I have to start taking care of myself. Emotional vocabulary. Oh, my God. Such a great and powerful tool. My daughters speak recovery now. They are like, oh, one date at a time, Mom. And it's just so cute. It's just so amazing, that powerful. And what a beautiful feeling, compassion, and letting other people feel compassion for me, not going through, oh, it's pity, they look less to me. It's compassion, and it's been a delight to watch, to watch my daughters grow. Thank you for letting me share.
Hello. Well, I love that term, the joy of life. And, you know, that word joy, you know, to me is just kind of a synonym for positive emotions, which they're great to have. I have little children in my life. I have this wonderful labradoodle. There's lots of ways that moments are emotionally yummy, you know, of course, that word. But but at a more deeper level, when I think of the joy of life, it's having like a sense of meaning and purpose that's beyond me. And I started this exercise a few years ago, or each morning in my meditation, I asked myself, what are three ways I can be of service to the world today? What are three things I can tangibly do? And typically, OA comes into it because I sponsor people and do workshops and do different things. So that's like that. And then also, some years ago, I decided to create a charity to educate people how to recognize strokes, because my grandmother died of a horrible stroke, and most people don't know how to recognize strokes. And it's a very kind of thankless job in a way, because it's mostly touching people I'll, you know, never see, never meet. You know, it's kind of a thing. But I heard this quote the other day, that the purpose of life is to go around planting trees, and you'll never know who gets to enjoy the shade, but you still go around planting those trees, you know? And that's how I feel. So, like, when I go to bed at night, there's this deep sense of, like, I'm bringing some good into this world. You know, I love this line that, you know, I cannot do all the good that the world needs, but the world needs all the good I can do. And, OA has kind of put me into this sort of a mindset way of living. And it's really wonderful. You know, it's not always, there'd be things that would be more fun and, quote, joyful. You know, there's more, you know, yummy things to do out there. And some things are actually not as interesting, but at a deep level, you just start to feel like, this is what I'm here to do. This is what we're here to do. And OA has changed my worldview to be like that. I've been in this fellowship now a little bit over 30 years. And most days, most of the time, I feel like I'm living, joy's not the best word, but I feel like I'm here, what I'm supposed to do. It's wonderful work, and I just feel aligned with this world. And so much of it is just letting go of that, you know, kind of need for me. And I like to use the term that me-we balance, you know, because there has to be some of the me playing with the kids and petting the dog and blah, 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 and just the fun and the roller coasters and the merry-go-rounds, you know, and whatever, and the fun movies. But then there's this sense of, how can I make the world better for others, you know, even though if it means there's sort of like less yummy time. And kind of finding that balance, I just think that's what it's about. I just call it the me-we balance, you know, self-care and service to others. And OA, I think, has taught me that more than anything, because that's what we do here. You know, we just help each other in thoughtful ways, and we're so motivated because we share that common goal to not overeat. But then after that, there's so much more. Thanks.
Now it's time to have the audience ask questions to the panel. You can do it from your seat. Just stand if you'd like to do that, starting there.
Sure. I'm Debbie, compulsive overeater. Hi, Debbie. And my question is, when you first come into the program, there's a lot of lies that, or when I came in, there's a lot of lies I tell myself, and slowly through the program I've learned what's true and real. When did you get to a point of real honesty? How many years did it take for you to realize sort of what you were doing with
food,
and
does
honesty play a role in the spiritual breakthrough?
Okay. I'd like to respond.
Maybe one second.
Please start.
Okay. Yeah, honesty was not one of my strong suits when it came to food. I was very, very shy about telling anybody what I was doing and ashamed of it. It took time. I mean, I had to be beat up enough and had to spend enough time with my sponsor to develop trust and his confidence and to open up slowly about it. I don't remember the exact time frame. It took a bit. I wouldn't even send him my food for quite a while. And it's an ongoing process. But and every once in a while, even now, I don't really want to say everything that's going on. But to the extent I can force myself, I feel much cleaner. And I get to a point where I don't feel clean if I'm holding things back.
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, I had to be working with the right person at the right time that I was comfortable telling everything. And even, you know, there have been points in my sobriety where my food sobriety, where I've had to work with different people to discuss different topics. But as far as food, I mean, first I knew sugar was my thing when I got here. And so I didn't do, and I've tried like the sugar-free fake whatever substitute a couple times. And my thing is, maybe I can get away with it, but maybe I can't. What if it triggers me? And so it just hasn't been a good experiment. And I think that we're ready when we're ready. And the denial and the rationalization and manipulation of food addiction is unbelievable. The things that I used to tell myself and believe and the way I walk through life, I mean, even down to just like thinking black was slimming and seeing pictures of myself 85 pounds ago thinking, what? You know, or the other day when I thought, oh, my God, you know, I'm huge and I got on the scale and I was down a pound. I'm still crazy. Like, that's why I have to run everything by someone else. It can be a sponsor. It can be a friend. We're not all crazy on the same day. So we get to help each other through it. And that works.
Are we done? I mean, is this timed? Okay. The principle behind step one is honesty. So I think in order to do the steps, you have to start with the basic of, yes, my life is out of control right now around food at least. So that basic admission. But then from there, you know, you just keep getting deeper and deeper into what honesty really means, I think. So it's an ongoing process. It's not a day that when it happens. But I will say, practically speaking, one of the things that has helped keep me honest is when the menu tells you how many calories there are in this item. Because when I really started, I got more honest about my food when I started counting calories. And said, oh, shit, there's that much in that? I better stop.
Yeah, I stopped reading the menu.
Okay, another question from somebody back there. But can you stand up and say it loud so everyone can hear the question? Thank you.
Hey, Leia.
Thank you guys so much. I just wanted to know what your daily practice is today to remain abstinent and maybe how it's changed and evolved throughout your recovery.
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, as Kim said, you know, it's contingent on maintaining a fit spiritual condition. So the first thing I have to do to be abstinent is my morning routine, which involves prayer and meditation and reading from one of the meditation books and talking to my sponsees and doing all of that. So, and then throughout the day, I've said the third step, prayer, already. So throughout the day, checking in with my higher power whenever I have to make a decision, big or small, about what's the next right thing to do. When I do that, my life goes much more smoothly. And when my life is going more smoothly, I'm not as tempted to overeat. So that's the first thing. And the next thing I have to do is at the end of the day, I email what I ate to my sponsor. And knowing that, see, one of the things that the program gives us, and this is about the last question as well, I have developed a conscience in this program. I know the difference between right and wrong. The principle behind step five is integrity. That means, you know, I try and do what's right. And so I don't want to lie to my sponsor. So that means I keep my food clean because I also don't want to be ashamed when I report in at the end of the day about what I actually ate. So I try and stick within my food plan.
So I think prayer and meditation are so important, and I have not done them consistently through my 9 years of recovery. And after my mom died, I couldn't get quiet for about 6 months without just falling apart. And so I just like shut that down. But I really feel like prayer is me asking God for what His will is instead of my own. And then meditation is me listening for the answers. Like if I get quiet and I'm just out there squirreling around, I can't hear the answers. And so meditation is a regular part of my daily practice again. And exercise is my moving meditation. Like it can be a hike with the dog. It can be my 50 minutes of Pilates. I was an exercise bulimic for sure. And now in less than an hour a day, I feel much better than I did hours and hours being obsessed with it. I have a sponsor that I do step work with and I'm honest with. I sponsor other women and I give this gift away because there's no greater joy than giving another woman the gift of recovery, walking through this process together, having her trust me, you know, with her deepest, darkest secrets. And if I fail to plan, I plan to fail. Like I need to plan my food. I need to be honest about my food. And the cleaner my food is, the cleaner my psyche is. And I don't always do it perfectly, but that's the plan.
Yeah, I take the For Today book and put my glasses on it at night so I don't forget to read it in the morning. I talk to sponsees. I tell my sponsor. I write a daily inventory. I do it in the AEIOU fashion. A being abstinence, E exercise. What I do, I for myself, O for others. The U is resentments, fears and resentments about myself and others. And then I figure it out with a Yahoo, which is something I'm happy about, and three things I'm grateful for. I'll start. The question is, how did you choose your abstinence when you started, and has it changed? My abstinence is three meals a day and occasional snack. It hasn't changed. My food plan, however, has changed. In the beginning, it was healthy choices, eliminating things that would obviously be, not moving toward a weight-losing abstinence. I still eat all foods in moderation because my history with restricting was to set off cravings. And there are certain foods I have to be much more careful of than others. But I'm also very clean about it. So that has changed over time. I've had to let go of things, had to get careful about specific foods, draw parameters around it. But the bottom line, abstinence hasn't.
So my bottom line abstinence hasn't changed in 9 years. It's no sweets and no chips and crackers. My food plan is three meals a day and two snacks. And I know I can't eat those alcoholic foods no matter what because they set off the craving, the obsession. So not an option, not a problem. There are other sneaky foods, though, that get sexy sometimes depending on my spiritual condition. You know, there are times that I can have a jar of almond butter and have a tablespoon once every few days. And then the day that I eat two tablespoons, it goes in the trash. And there are things that I can eat out, foods that are, you know, they're abstinent foods, but they're too sexy for me to eat every day. So I just really have to stay honest with what those foods are. Like right now, I'm addicted to gum and coffee. Like there's no doubt about it. And you can wrestle me to the floor. I'm not ready to give them up. You know, there are other things that I have been willing to let go, like white bread.
Well, as I mentioned, my first abstinence was no refined sugar. And that really, now we have a differentiation between abstinence and food plan. So my abstinence is refraining from compulsive overeating. My food plan has changed. The current food plan, just jump to the beginning, the chase here. My current food plan is three meals a day, nothing in between, and those meals don't include snack foods like chips. And I, for years, I have not had popcorn when I go to a movie because I can't eat popcorn like a gentleman. And so 3 meals a day with nothing in between is my current abstinence. There have been times when my abstinence was 1,860 calories a day, you know, and that was just, you know. So it's changed. It's changed over time. And there was a time when I did not eat white bread, and then I took it back, and now I'm back to no table bread. That's how I define it.
Question relates to complacency. I'm maintaining a 60-pound weight loss recovery since 2008. Yesterday, I ordered, this relates to complacency, as you'll see, I had a salad, and there were croutons on the salad. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only person in this room that ever thinks, should I eat that? Well, I don't eat bread. But a crouton is not bread, because it's in a square shape. So this relates to complacency. Do you ever just mindlessly eat something that you normally don't eat in that sense? Because I'm sort of being a little complacent. You know what? I'm still this weight and all that. Just kind of throwing it out there.
Well, one of the sayings I kept saying to myself in getting out of relapse was if you're coasting, you're going downhill. And I was coasting. I was complacent. Yeah, definitely. That was like a key component to the relapse, was complacency. And the other issue you bring up is when I wake up from a nap, my defenses are down. My impulse control is foggy. And for whatever reason, when I wake up from a nap, I want to eat salted nuts. It's just, you know, quirky thing. And, you know, on a bad day, I might have those. But, you know, now I'm not having snack foods. So I have, like, this guard against my lack of impulse control or complacency around that particular odd quirk in my makeup.
For me, I think it's about whether or not it triggers the allergy for me. Like, I don't eat white bread most of the time, not because it's on my abstinence, but because it makes me sleepy. And there were just a few croutons in my salad, and that doesn't set me off. I mean, I've eaten a taco salad that had some crunched up chippy-like stuff on it. That triggers me, and so I don't do that again. And but it's so easy to, like, get a little bit lax. I went back to Kansas City for Christmas and had a little barbecue, you know, things I don't usually eat. And then I came back and my friends came from Tennessee and we were at Disneyland and places that I wouldn't choose the same foods that I would normally choose. And just a little relaxed is terrifying to me because I don't want to get comfortable there, because I could get comfortable there and be up 20 pounds, you know, next month. So I have to watch it, but I also don't want to, like, make it so self-obsessive. I just have to know if it triggers me or not, I think, is my bottom line.
Yeah, 100% I can get complacent, and the longer I'm in it, the more that can call to me. The difference is I become aware of it, and if I can cop to it, if I can talk to my sponsor about it, if I can be honest and get it out in the open, the little gremlins that want to scare me hiding in the dark recesses in my brain are very scary. If I pull them out in the light, they're kind of small and shriveled. And because the reality is, if I give in to the little complacencies, I'm like an airplane that's a couple of degrees off course. And if you do that more than a few times, instead of going to New York, I'm heading for Mexico.
Hi, I'm Loretta, a compulsive overeater. My question is, now that we have the definition that includes abstaining from eating behaviors, how do you handle it? You know, sometimes I'll eat too fast. Well, that's part of my compulsion, but sometimes I have 10 minutes to have my meal. So I don't want to consider that breaking my abstinence. How would you handle that?
Well, I try to disconnect the eating machine. So when I start to feel that compulsion, I try to put the fork down between bites or put the sandwich down between bites. It's very simple, but it's very powerful. It just breaks the cycle, because otherwise, left to my own, it's this nonstop circular motion into my mouth.
Yeah, I think my biggest compulsive behavior is binge eating, and I've refrained from that. And there's, to me, there's a difference between a meal being a little too big, because that happens once in a while, and shoveling in food mindlessly. But I like the idea of taking a breath. I also heard a guy share that before everything he eats, he says a little prayer and says, God, please let this be enough. And I love that. And sometimes that'll reset. I'll use his suggestion and just say, God, let this be enough, and take a moment, that just a little bit of a pause.
One of the things that put a lot of weight on me was eating at night in front of the TV set, alternating between salty, crunchy, and sweet, creamy. And so, now, part of my very first abstinence was no eating after dinner, and I still don't eat after dinner. So that was a compulsive food behavior that had to stop. Now, but what's analogous to that is eating breakfast while I'm reading the newspaper. Because I'm not, in either case, I'm not paying attention to what I'm eating. I'm paying attention to what's in front of my eyes. So if I find myself watching YouTube videos while I'm having breakfast, or reading the newspaper while I'm having breakfast, that's a behavior that I really have to look at and say, no, mindful eating is better. Tasting my food, noticing how much I'm eating, and eating it more slowly is a lot better than watching Colbert's monologue.
I'm Tom, a recovering compulsive eater, and I came to OA in 1980, so I've been here 39 plus years, and I came here hoping that I'd see Roseanne's friends, and I'm grateful to have found them. Wasn't exactly in the age cohort, I thought, but I'm happy to see anybody who's been abstaining for a long time. And as I've sat there and listened, I realized there were periods when I went through the motions of OA. You know, I went to the meetings, and I tried to eat what I was supposed to eat. And I sort of had a philosophy that if I didn't gain weight, then I was doing, everything was okay. And then that changed. I began to gain weight. And so I started calling my food in again, and had a sponsor who was in the HAL program. And I really didn't want to work HAL, but he let me call him. And it just helped me get honest. And I'm also in AA, and I hear more frequently than I hear it here, but they say to stay in the middle of the pack. And when I'm not in the middle of the pack, then I'm getting back to being alone. And loneliness, it's taken me really over 30 years to really appreciate the depth of how this is a disease about loneliness, that I grew up as a child with two brothers and a sister, but feeling alone, and ran away from that, and then was alone. And that, you know, learning to relate to people and to be intimate and to have friendships requires learning to feel and to be not afraid of conflict. And I spent a lot of time trying to control things so that I wouldn't get hurt. And that didn't stop just because I didn't compulsively overeat. And so for me, that's the spiritual journey. But I we had lunch today, and there was an extra soup. And I was sort of pondering how much soup. This was less soup than I had at home. And so if I were at home, I could have that other soup. You know, I'm sitting there, here I'm at an AA meeting, going back and forth about this soup. And so eventually it got to be 10 minutes of one. Nobody ate it, so I felt I should take care of it. And so I ate the extra soup, and it was in my food plan. But I'm also paying a lot more attention. I've heard for years that people say, you know, as I got older, I had to eat less. And I took that in as data, but I've never really acted on it. I'm 71 now, and I'm thinking I may be getting near that point. I'm not sure. But but I have to learn when I'm full. And I sort of know when I'm full, but I don't. And that means being mindful enough to say, I think I'm getting close to full. Maybe I should just stop now. And that means having my higher power engaged with me while I'm eating. And that's really my takeaway from this conference, it's all about surrender and just giving up and turning everything over. And I'm just delighted to be here. I needed something outside my zone in this first time I've ever been here, and I'm delighted. Thank you.
Anyone else like to ask a question or share? No, nobody? How about you? I know you have 40-something years. She was our speaker yesterday.
Sherry, you asked a question.
Hi, I'm Phyllis, and I'm a chunky, drunky, junkie. Yes, I am, right here under my nose. I've been listening to all of this, and I think about this all the time. When I came into the program, they didn't have to explain abstinence to me. They just told me that you will eat three weighed, measured, moderate meals a day with nothing in between except black coffee, black tea, and... That's it. And I do not fool around with the program. I'm in my 48th year of being abstinent. And with God willing, another year, I will have 50 years. 50 years of two scrambled eggs and an orange for breakfast. You know, and that kind of thing. But more than that is what I've learned from the program over the years. That's what's so important. That's the way of life. You know, I was not the most lovable person in the world. I don't know that I'm that now either. But I know I care more about myself than others do because that's what matters. I have to take care of me. I have to take care of me. That's a big responsibility. Sure, I have three kids. Well, they're not kids anymore. They're 65, 63, and 60, you know? And I did that. I did that through the grace of the program. I learned how to bring up my kids. I taught them what to eat. I taught them how to be polite and lovable. And you know what? That's exactly what they are. That's exactly what they are. And I got that from the program. The loss of weight was very important. I used to weigh, I don't know, 235 pounds. I can't even remember anymore. It's like 100 pounds more than I weigh today. That's because I still eat what I am supposed to eat, and not supposed to eat doesn't come into the picture. You know, I just don't do that. I'm not afraid of it anymore. I'm not afraid of losing anything. I want to be able to give. I want to be able to give. I want to give it to my kids. I want to give it to people in the program. I think giving this program away is the best thing that ever happened to all of us, because never have we been so involved in caring about other people like we do since we've been in OA. Thank you.
I'm going to wrap it up, but I'm going to just take 1 minute. My name is Linda, compulsive overeater, bulimic. I have 41 years. I came in and out from 1972 to 1978. My absence started with no bulimia, and when I could, I got on three meals, and when I could weigh and measure, I weighed and measured. I've gone to all the food 12-step programs, and I came back to OA for full circle, and my absence is three meals a day, and living in between, I wear my absence like a loose garment. Sometimes I eat things that don't agree with me. and I get right back on track. I still, if I'm somewhere and there's too much food or I'm getting called by the food, I make a phone call or I text a friend and I say I'm done eating. I still do that. And one other thing I do is I try to the best of my ability to abstain from negative thinking. Last night I heard someone share, just change the channel. So I'll just end with that. And I'll end with reading whatever it says here, which is, that's all the time we have for sharing. It's now time to close the session. Let's thank our speakers and all who have done service today. So let's thank. Let's thank Don, Kim, and Frank for being here today. If you've enjoyed this workshop, we encourage you to stop by the tape table to order copies of this session or any other session. All workshops and main speaker events are being recorded and are available on CD or as an electronic download. Please join hands as we close with the Serenity Prayer or the Third Step Prayer.